This program is presented by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland, Michigan. This presentation coincides with programming on Midland Government Television, covering government affairs in the City of Midland.
Hi, Midland. I'm Katie Geyer, here with Grant Merschel, the Director of Planning and Community Development for the City of Midland. As we shift into recovery mode following the flooding event in May of 2020, understandably, our residents have a lot of questions about how to rebuild their homes and where to go next. Today, we're hoping to answer some of those questions for you. Grant, can you tell us a little bit about the process for rebuilding if you've had flood damage after the flooding event?
Yes, so thanks for having me, Katie. And of course, this is an important time to start to chart the course forward for a lot of homeowners. So one of the first questions that a homeowner needs to ask themselves is, am I in the 100-year floodplain? And if they are within the 100-year floodplain, that's going to be a different set of regulations than if they are outside the 100-year floodplain. So it's important to figure out first whether or not they're in the 100-year floodplain or if they're outside, because that's going to set where they go from here.
So if they're not inside the floodplain, what do they need to do to start repairing their home?
So if they're not inside the floodplain, it's very similar to a regular building permit process, where you would simply contact the city building department. You would pull the necessary permits, which would be electrical, plumbing, mechanical, or regular building permits, and then you would be on your way, scheduling inspections and completing the work.
Okay, so what if you are inside the 100-year floodplain?
Correct, so if you are within the 100-year floodplain and you don't have what's called a letter of map amendment or a LOMA, so you're in the 100-year floodplain, you are subject to the standards of the National Flood Insurance Program, which is the need to do what's called a substantial damage, substantial improvement.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about that substantial damage and substantial improvement process. What does that look like? What type of information do homeowners need to have? And how can the city help them with that?
Sure. So what they need to determine is really how bad their property was damaged. And the way to do that is to do a true damage assessment and determine what type of work needs to be done to repair it back to what it was previously. And so they need to go through and have a contractor or another licensed professional be able to come through and provide qualified estimates for the work that needs to be done. That would include all the materials, all the time necessary to put it back to the way that it was previous. If they determine, or once they determine that value, they also need to determine the total market value of the structure itself. And there's five different ways for a homeowner to do that. And one of the ways is something that they can get from the city, which is through assessment records that determines the value of the structure itself. They can also hire an appraiser to go out and do an appraisal on the site, which would allow for determination of the structural value. It's important to recognize that we're not talking about the value of the whole property. So if the property was purchased recently or there was appraisal done that was recent, a lot of times we can't accept those because that's including value of property and other types of assets that are on the site, like a porch or a deck or maybe a swimming pool, that type of thing. What they need to really determine is the structure of the home itself and then compare that to the total cost of the damage. If it's less than 50% of the value of the structure, they would be able to proceed through the regular permitting process, just like you would of a house that's outside the floodplain. If you're over that 50% threshold, you then have to do full compliance with the floodplain regulations, and that requires raising the lowest level finish floor to at least a foot above the base flood elevation.
Okay. So for someone who, let's say their costs exceed 50% of their home's value and they do have to comply with those NFIP regulations, what are some of the things they can do to help raise that base flood elevation of their home?
So there is a variety of ways they can do that. If they have a basement, sometimes simply making that first floor or that floor above the basement, your lowest level finish floor, that can be in compliance with the standards. On occasion, that would take filling in of the basement. That's something that I think a lot lot of homeowners may have heard if they've been in this situation and trying to gain information the last few weeks. So filling in of the basement with proper flood venting, of course, removing any critical infrastructure out of that basement like hot water heater, furnace, that type of thing, all of that would need to be relocated if that's one of the options. Another way would be to actually elevate the home. That's something that hasn't really been done in Midland's jurisdiction in a number of years, but it's something that does take place throughout the country where these same standards apply. So the important thing I think for homeowners to recognize if they are above that 50% is then to start to work with a contractor to try and figure out what their solution would be. Of course, the first step though, if you're above 50% of the value with the repairs that are necessary, the first step would be getting an elevation certificate to determine where your floors are at in relation to the base flood.
Okay, how do they do that?
So they would actually need to hire a licensed surveyor. That's not a service that the city can provide, but it is something that a number of firms in our region offer, where a surveyor comes out and actually takes a look at the elevation shots of the home and provides them an elevation certificate, which shows those elevations in relation to the base flood.
Okay. What about homeowners that have a condemned property? What do they need to do before they can go in and start repairing the home?
So we have had quite a few condemnations, and the vast majority have actually already had the temporary shoring or otherwise structural reinforcement done. But that's one of the first things they need to do if they have not touched the property at all. They need to bring in a licensed professional that can do shoring up of that home to reinforce it. Our building inspector then can come out and take a look at the property to ensure that it is properly done and they can temporarily access that house, maybe allowing for going and getting some valuable things that are within there still. But in order for us to remove the condemnation notice, they do need to have building permits issued and all of the work completed to allow us to really reissue that certificate of occupancy to allow them to, again, live in that home.
Okay. So for anyone who is in the floodplain that's doing some work on their homes, are there any other type of permits that they might need beyond just a standard city building permit?
So if they're in the 100-year floodplain and they start to do work beyond that 50% of repairs, so let's say that we've gone through that substantial damage, substantial assessment, our improvement assessment, and we get to a point where we need to have a filling in of the basement or some other type of work, they are going to need an EGLE permit, and that's a permit from the state, which is the Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy. It's a floodplain permit that would allow them to bring in additional fill material into that property. So that's one other step that they need to go forward on. Permitting wise, I know we've had a lot of other questions from folks. Can I think about a berm or some type of possible seawall or that type of thing? All of those types of actions in property that's within the 100-year floodplain, it does require a permit from EGLE as well.
Okay, and they would work with EGLE directly to get all of those permits, is that right?
They would. They could either work with them directly as the homeowner, or they could have their licensed contractor act on their behalf.
Perfect. So this seems like a lot of work. Why do we have all these rules in place?
That's a question we get a lot, and I think it's important to recognize that we do have these standards in the city of Midland because the city participates in the National Flood Insurance Program. It's very important that the city participates in the National Flood Insurance Program because that allows people in the city to obtain national flood insurance. So on a regular flood, this of course was not a regular flood, it was due to the dam failures, but on a regular flood, having flood insurance is very important because that's the first line of defense to repair homes in the event that they're damaged due to flood. In order for us to be eligible as a community to obtain flood insurance, we have to comply with the NFIP standards, and that means having these hard conversations after a big flood in order to make sure that we are enforcing those rules that apply, not only in Midland, but any other community that's in the NFIP.
I think it's important too for residents to understand that because we comply with the NFIP, everyone in the city of Midland can purchase flood insurance, whether they're in the floodplain or not. Is that correct?
That is correct. And that is something we do hear a lot is, you know, I'm not in the floodplain, so I don't need flood insurance. Well, there's always a risk to wherever you live within a community. And in this particular case, the floodwaters were very far outside the 100-year floodplain. So people that do live in the community, they can obtain flood insurance, and they can talk to their homeowner's insurance about it. And a lot of times their homeowner's insurance can offer them a flood insurance policy. And of course, your premium is based off of how risky your home is. So if you're well within the 100-year floodplain, it'll be a higher premium than someone that's outside of there.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So how do residents find out if they are in the floodplain?
Very good question. So going on to the city's website, there's an online GIS map that allows any homeowner to search their property address in the top right. And then on the far left, there's layers that can come up. And one is the 100-year flood. So you'll click on the flood layer, open that up, and then scroll down, and there's the 100-year floodplain that clicks on. It's a blue shaded layer on the map, and that's what shows properties that are within or outside. One of the things that's important to recognize is if your property is in the 100-year floodplain, but your home or your structure is outside the 100-year floodplain, you are exempt from these special standards. So if your structure is outside that 100-year floodplain, but you have a little bit of property that's in it, you don't have to comply.
Okay, good to know. And for anyone who wants to go and check out that floodplain map and determine if you're in the floodplain, you can go to the city's website and click on the maps icon on the homepage. And then, like Grant said, you will search your property address in the upper right corner, go to the layers tool, select flood, and then select 100-year floodplain. It is accessible on mobile, but we do recommend, just for the best user experience, that you do that from a desktop computer. So let's talk a little bit about, now that we've known what we need to repair or replace, what if someone can't afford or doesn't want to make those improvements?
That's another question we've had a lot. And it's important to recognize that if the property owner feels that they don't have maybe the financial means, or that it doesn't make sense for them to go through that cost of compliance to bring it up to the standards, they do have options. We have seen properties that have been listed and for the market to kind of sort out itself. That's one thing that's available to homeowners, and that's something they could do today, would be to try and sell the property. They would have the option of demolishing the property if they would like to go in that route. That's another thing that we've had, some options that have taken place. But one of the other options that is available is the possibility of a buyout in the future. When we talk about the buyout option, I do really want to provide a lot of qualifiers, because there's no surety in this program. It's utilized through a grant that's actually passed through the state from FEMA as well. And it's something that the city would have to apply for on the property owner's behalf. And it's probably about an 18-month process. And it would deal with an appraised value. And there's a couple more kind of specifics on that property as well. But that is an option that we have had a few homeowners want to explore. And that's something we can talk to them more about if they contact the planning department.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. So we've heard a lot of questions about FEMA and what they're doing to help us through this disaster. What is FEMA doing in the community right now?
So right now, FEMA it's a little bit different because, of course, we're still living with COVID-19 and the pandemic that's going on. So a lot of times FEMA would have boots on the ground in more magnitude than they do right now. But the city has passed on the disaster declaration information to the state. And my understanding is soon the state will be sending it on to the president and the federal government to make a request for a disaster declaration to take place. If there is a disaster declaration that takes place, that's when there's opportunity for individual assistance and also business assistance due to the hardships that people face. So there's still a bit of a question that's out there as to whether or not that's going to take place, and it's just a matter of time before we get that question answered.
Sure. Now, we've heard from a lot of homeowners that said they completed our damage assessment through the online portal or through the teams of volunteers that were out working in the community to help make that happen. That was extremely important for this process, but that does not qualify them necessarily for FEMA assistance. Is that right?
That is correct. So if the disaster declaration takes place, a homeowner or a business owner would then have to apply for additional FEMA assistance. So there would be another round of applications that would take place, which is very different than that damage assessment that went through the county's website or the city's website.
So what does FEMA assistance typically look like if they were to provide assistance to the community?
So individual assistance does allow for up to $35,000 of help, although FEMA does say on average it's about $5,000 or $6,000. So we don't want to set false expectations for the amount of money that individuals could have in disaster assistance, since it could be a lot more around that $5,000 or $6,000 allowance. The other thing to remember is that FEMA's programs at the national level, they're designed not to make people whole, they're simply to just be gap coverage. So also having the right expectations in that way is important.
Sure. So what other options do homeowners have if they need additional financial assistance? What do you recommend they do?
So a few things that I think we've heard that have been valuable is, of course, conversations if they have a mortgage on the property, making sure that they are talking to their lender. There could be some assistance that's arrived in that type of way. There's also importance, if they did have flood insurance, that there's ICC or increased cost of compliance coverage that a homeowner could have. And that's up to $30,000 to really help with those things like filling in a basement or raising the home or doing other type of floodplain compliance type of work on the property. So that's another financial resource that a homeowner could have if they did have flood insurance.
Sure, great. We also want to make sure people know there are additional grants and loan options available from some of the private sector organizations in the community. So if you're looking for some additional assistance, you can call 211 or contact the United Way of Midland County. As we move into that recovery mode for the rest of the community, they will be very pivotal in helping our residents find some additional resources that are available to them. So make sure to reach out to them if you have any questions regarding financial assistance. So we all know that the dam failure created a much larger situation than what we had in 2017, and this was an historic flooding event for our community. But the city has, since 2017, undergone some additional flood mitigation since that time. Where do people go to find out more information about what's actually occurred so far?
Sure. So an important thing would be going out onto the city's website. A couple of resources as it relates to the studies that took place after 2017 include the sanitary and storm sewer studies that are out on the website as well. There's also the capital improvement plan of the city, and that is the document that shows capital improvements for the next 6 years. One of the things we've heard comments on is, well, their city doesn't seem to have a strategy to deal with flooding events. And I don't think that's accurate, because this 2017 study did put in a lot of recommendations on to what the city can do to start to mitigate against future flooding. Of course, they're very high dollar values. And so some of the things that the city's been doing to date are been some of the important things that we can do with the resources that we have available without having to go through a large bonding type of financial additional revenue, I guess, source and that type of thing. But I think the important thing for residents to realize is that after 2017, there was a very intentional and methodical movement of the city to try and address issues like this. Of course, the dam failures were way beyond what we were planning for.
Sure. So if you want to go and take a look at the results of the sanitary and storm sewer study, see the mitigation efforts that we've now done to date, you can go to cityofmidlandmi.gov/flood-response and check that out. And you can also find the capital improvement plan on our website by searching capital improvement plan. So last question, if anyone still has questions or needs assistance with any of the things that we've talked about, permitting, additional questions, am I in the LOMA area, who do they contact?
So two departments of the city are going to be helpful as it relates to permitting and any questions on the substantial damage, substantial improvement process. They're going to want to reach out to the city building department, and that's 837-3388. Or 3383, 837-3388, or 837-3383. They can also call the planning department at 837-3374, and that would be for questions related to a letter of map amendment, like you mentioned, the LOMA, or whether or not they're within the floodplain.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your time, Grant. I really hope this is helpful to all of our residents of the community. I know there's a lot of uncertainty, so please feel free to reach out to the city directly, and we'll help in any way we can.
This program is presented by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland, Michigan. This presentation coincides with programming on Midland Government Television, covering government affairs in the City of Midland.